following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. This is Aaron Lojeski. I am guest hosting for David Pruse. You're listening to Problem Corner. Today, the guest in the studio is Amanda Bowman, a former reporter, longtime reporter for the Newsminer.
Hi, everyone.
And I guess we're going to find out for everything else. So for the beginning of this program, Amanda, why don't you tell us what brought you to Fairbanks? How long have you been here? Like, what's your brief
bio? Yeah, I'd be glad to. I've been up here since 96, and I came up as a military spouse, and that relationship didn't work out, but Alaska worked out really well for me, and I ended up going to school at UAF and getting my degree, and here in Fairbanks, I was able to achieve my dream since I was a teenager to work at a newspaper. So I put in about 20 years at the Newsminer. And that's how you and I met.
Wait, was the newspaper the first job you're saying that you did?
No. I did all kinds of jobs. I worked at an amusement park. I worked at an ice cream parlor, not in Fairbanks, but I did lots of jobs as a teenager and in my 20s. I even tried waitressing. But I worked at the student newspaper when I was in high school, and I caught the bug. Me and my friend, we actually got on at the student newspaper because we both thought a boy was cute who was on the student newspaper. But it turned out to be more than that for me. I really enjoyed the work and ended up studying it in college and did a 20-year career in journalism that I'm very proud of.
Okay, and then your time with the Newsminer, at least temporarily, has come to an end.
Yeah.
And then now you're working for the Chamber.
Yeah. I help the Chamber as their advocacy coordinator. I'm not here as a Chamber representative.
I was just going to ask so that the record's straight for that. So you're not representing the Chamber. You're just here as Amanda Bowman sharing your personal opinions. And then I'll also state, and I won't have to state this for very much longer, for anyone who's on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, when they're making public statements, our ethics code says you need to make a statement that says you're making this on your own behalf and you're not representing the body. And all of my statements today, that's the case. I am not making any statements on behalf of the body, if I make any at all, which I probably will, but as the host here. But Amanda, hopefully you'll be making most of the statements because you're the guest. But so for today, we can certainly go over any more bio if you've got more you'd like to share. Otherwise.
Well, this was a fun election for me because it was the first one in a long time where I wasn't working as a reporter. So it was kind of different to follow things as just a regular citizen. And I guess we'll get to what happened in the election soon, but it was different for me, and I couldn't resist, like, definitely my journalist tingly, you know, interest was stimulated, and I'm looking forward to talking about the election with you today. Thanks for having me.
Well, we'll get into that in just a moment, and first, I think I wanted to make another personal statement. I'd been joking with people for, like, the last 6 months. I was like, I'm getting fired in 6 months, you know? And some of them were like, no, you're not getting fired. You're just terming out. And so I'll just let all the viewers know, yes, our listeners, you know, I'm just terming out, finishing my end of my sixth year, my second term, and now I understand why they were saying I wasn't getting fired, because there were people who got fired, and trust me, if you're that person, there's a big difference between not getting reelected and the voter selects someone else and actually just terming out, a very, very big difference. So I certainly wasn't trying to make light of what was going to happen, and I had no clue what was about to happen. Usually incumbents don't get fired. Usually they get reelected. That's the norm, by and large.
When's the changeover? When's the last day? It's soon, isn't it?
For the assembly, so let's see, what day is today? Today's Wednesday, right? So tomorrow's Thursday. Tomorrow we have a committee of the whole, and then we have a finance meeting, and then we did not finish our assembly meeting last week, so we adjourned to immediately after the finance committee meeting. So hopefully we'll finish our meeting that started on last Thursday tomorrow, and then we do have a brand new full meeting a week from Thursday. At the start of that meeting, we'll have the swearing in of the guests for the borough, or sorry, not the guests, the new borough assembly members. They'll get sworn in, but they do not take office immediately, because we actually need to go ahead and certify the election results, and then they will actually take office, I'm wanting to say, the very first moment of the Monday after.
Okay.
But please don't quote me on that, because I could be wrong. Maybe it's the first moment of Sunday, but it's real close to the end of the month.
You've worked really hard as an assemblyman. When I look at the budget book and I look at some of the financial standing of the borough, I feel like you deserve some of the credit for that. How do you feel about leaving? Do you feel...
You're starting to sound like you're the host.
I know, I can't help it. I told you I might flip the script.
I've been reflecting more on my time on the assembly. I have had Well, let's put it this way. When I got elected, I had a vague idea of what needed to be done, but I didn't know how all the gears of government really worked. Even though I had been observing it for years, it's like trying to learn how to drive by watching someone drive a car. You get a good idea of what's going on, but you don't really know how to drive. And so once you're there and you're doing it, it takes a while to learn, but... it's very, very complicated. It's like driving a car that's stick shift with six or seven different transmissions, and you have to be changing all these gears at the same time whilst turning and watching for other cars and coordinating with Fairbanks and the state of Alaska and the city of North Pole. And if you screw any one thing up, the whole thing gets derailed and stops. That's how you pass an ordinance. I mean, obviously, some are more simple than others, but it can be like that. So it's very, very tough. But no, I ended up being way more influential in ways that I never thought were, quite frankly, possible. But at any rate...
The borough's paying down debt. The taxes have been stable. There's a lot of stuff that you could be proud of, I think.
Well, no, that's the big thing is the debt. It was a combination of things, really, but I was one of the key ingredients. One was the state stopped paying for school bond debt reimbursement, and then that immediately had a shifting of who pays for it to the local taxpayers. And once that started to happen, the local taxpayers rejected every single bond initiative afterwards. They said, oh, well, we used to only have to pay 90% or 10% of the whole bill, and now we have to pay 100%. Maybe we'll think twice about floating this bond package. And so the combination of that, and then I floated this savings plan where we'd save 10% of our budget every year to pay for capital so that we'd have a funding source other than debt. It's had our bond payments have dropped, I think $9 or $10 million a year, since I was able to get the cash flow portion of the capital budget in. But at any rate, we should probably shift gears here. You can ask questions later if you want.
Okay.
But let's go to, well, and I'm just checking here. You guys all know, listening, I am guest hosting for David Prusin. Just so everyone knows, the call-in number is 458-8255. We're going to be talking a bit more about the election. And actually, I'm going to hit a button here. I think we're going to a break, Fairbanks North Pole. If you hear the ads come on in just a moment, it means we're going to a break. And no, looks like we're not going to the break just yet. We got 55 seconds here. Sorry, 10 seconds. And then we're going to a break.
So today we're going to talk about the elections, right? And the dark money.
Yes. After the break, we'll talk
about that. Stay tuned, everybody.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
There are things on this earth, things you can't always see with your eyes. I'm not talking about ghosts. That's just for children, usually. But this isn't about them. I'm talking about something far scarier. I know the potential destruction lurking in hidden places beneath your yard from an improperly maintained septic tank. My family has Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing pump me out once a year. That's all I need, and I continue to serve them much better.
Men all over town are raving about Fairbanks Urology.
I had to go to the emergency room, and they realized that my bladder was blocked, and so they put a catheter inside of me. It was very awkward until I came here to Fairbanks Urology. The surgery that he came up with was totally not invasive. About 2 weeks later, the catheter was able to be removed. I think the man's a saint, honestly. Really, for what he's done for me.
Make the call today, 328-0989 for Fairbanks Urology.
Fairbanks, listen up. Affordable Used Cars has purchased over 450 late model vehicles to fill the lot with a great selection to choose from. You can find that vehicle you've been looking for. We have Tacoma TRDs, 4Runner TRDs, Sienna Hybrid all-wheel drives, Bronco Sports, and many more makes and models to choose from. They're arriving daily and won't last long. Hurry in for the best selection before they're all gone. Come downtown to Affordable Used Cars at 2525 South Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Overcast skies today with a chance for snow. Daytime highs approaching 32. Southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Snow likely tonight. Lows around 23. Cloudy skies expected. Snow showers likely at times. Tomorrow, highs level off around 29. Overcast. A dusting of snow tonight. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back, Fairbanks and North Pole. You're listening to Problem Corner. I am Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting for David Pruse. Call number is 458-8255. Amanda Bowman is the guest in the studio today. And we are about to start talking about the Fairbanks North Scarborough election results, talking about the numbers. So, Amanda, what was different this time? What did you notice that was different? And you are someone who's watched this for how many years did you report on it before this?
Since the late 90s, on and off. I've been reporting on Fairbanks North Scarborough elections. And this year, I started getting these cards in the mail. Here's what happened. I started getting these cards in the mail, and there was an Anchorage address attached to it, and they were promoting certain candidates and denouncing others. And I just got curious, like, about this group, and the cards say paid for by Putting Alaskans First Committee, and then it has a address in Anchorage, 3333 Denali Street, and it talks about Kim Hayes, chair, and the top contributors, Unite America PAC of Denver, Colorado, LIUNA Political Fund in Washington, D.C., and the NEA Advocacy Fund of Washington, D.C. And I guess my journalist spidey senses tingled, like, who are these groups? Why are they participating in our little election? We're one of the smallest states in the union.
Wait, so hold up. It's called Putting Alaskans First.
Yep.
Where's it headquartered out of?
Anchorage, 3333 Denali Street, Suite 125.
Okay. Anchorage is technically inside of Alaska. I know some people debate
that. Oh, some of the money was coming.
On the card, yeah. Well, I was making a joke. Oh. I was disparaging Anchorage a little bit. But yeah, Anchorage is technically part of Alaska. And so we have this Anchorage headquartered group. And then those three addresses you just gave me for the top three donors were what? D.C., yeah. D.C., and Denver?
Denver, right.
And then what's the last sentence of that disclaimer say? I happen to know what it says.
A majority of contributions to the Putting Alaskans First Committee came from outside of Alaska.
So we've got this committee called Putting Alaskans First. Its top three donors are from outside of Alaska. And the majority of its money is on the disclosure saying it's not from Alaska.
Yeah, and here we are. We're a small state. We're the, you know what, the second or third largest municipality in a small state. And I just wonder, like, why are people in Colorado donating money and in Washington, D.C. involved in our elections? I was curious. It struck me as curious.
Well, I think the news miner personally dropped the ball on it this time. And I'm not saying that they didn't care. It could be that they didn't have the resources, enough reporters with enough experience, or whatever it may be. But I remember, I actually did tip off the news miner. I didn't know what the story was, but a couple weeks before the election, I said, hey, there's these postcards coming. And it's not just postcards, it's radio ads and the other forms of spending from outside groups. And I said, I really suspect it's a lot of money, but I don't have the time to go look it up myself. And I let a few people at the news miner know, and nothing happened. And then after the election, I didn't print it out. I've got a article from the news miner here that I did print out, but it was the day before this article was printed. They talked about the assembly races, and it was, I wanted to say it was the top of the front of the paper. And sometimes they'll take out like a little quote and put it in big bold under that headline. And it said like 2% of money came from outside, which was technically true based off the numbers they were looking at. But I found it highly misleading, and I was very disappointed in that headline or the subtitle to the headline.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of money that came into this election. And I don't know if you want to drop the numbers on your audience or if you want me to, but there was quite a bit of money that came into this election from this Putting Alaskans First Committee. Now, some of their donations are in state, but my review, I couldn't quite see that many of the donations were from our community. There were donors in Anchorage that I saw, and I did see a couple.
You're talking about for this independent expenditure called Putting Alaskans First that was funded by a majority non-Alaskans.
Right. And I don't know if you want to take a minute to talk about independent expenditure groups, because as you reminded me yesterday, they don't coordinate with candidates directly.
They're not supposed to. As far as I know, it's actually illegal. That doesn't necessarily mean they don't. You know, I don't know all of the fine details of the rules, but this is how I suspect it works. Let's suppose you want to run for something. And I'm not saying that you're announcing some campaign, but let's just suppose hypothetically you wanted to run for something. And let's suppose I had deep pockets and I wanted to fund an independent expenditure. Now, to a certain extent, this is less relevant than it used to be, because now there's not campaign limits. So if I was Warren Buffett, I could just write you a $1 billion check and you could go spend it in a school board race or whatever. No one's written a check that large. I think the largest checks that have been written so far maybe are $5,000 locally.
I saw some $5,000 checks in the state races last year when I was still a reporter and I was like spending my days combing over this stuff. But I didn't see any much like that from individuals in these.
Yeah, the federal donation limit's approximately $5,000. So it almost seems like there's this unspoken rule that you don't give more than what the federal limit is to even a state or local candidate, even though you can.
As a candidate, I've talked to candidates who have told me, you know, if someone offered me this big check, it makes them a little queasy. They know what people think when they look at these finance reports, right? You've been a candidate multiple times. I mean, you've got to really think about that.
Well, the way I would take it is this person trying to leverage me in the future if I get elected? And there's some donors who can do that, and they're just like, I think you're a great candidate and I want you there because you're going to go analyze everything and make the best decision for the community. If I know that that's their angle, I'll probably take the check myself. But the other thing is, I don't think if you're the candidate, you ever want too much of your funding to come from a single source.
Yeah.
So it'd be good for any campaign just to have a policy of, well, we don't want to have any more than 10% from a single source or 20% or whatever. And that would be a great way to deal with it. Let's suppose let's talk about IE. So what's an IE? The IE was more valuable in the past than it is now, but it is still very valuable for certain groups. So there's still a donation limit for political groups to give directly to candidates, which means if you're something like a union or you're a realtor group or like one of these trade groups, you are limited to $1,000 per calendar year donation to a candidate. So Warren Buffett can write a $1 billion check, but you can only write a $1,000 check. So the balance of power actually shifted with our election rework away from political groups and towards individuals, actually. And so these groups, though, they can get around it. There's a loophole, and that loophole is the independent expenditure, basically. So the independent expenditure is like a private campaign. Obviously, it's not on the ballot, but it gets to do its own campaigning for whoever, or it could be a ballot initiative, whatever's on the ballot. And that now that group can spend unlimited.
Yeah. And the Putting Alaskans First Committee, they've been pretty successful with their campaigns. I did some research on the Alaska Public Offices Commission website and looked them up. And it looks like They started in 2015 participating in Fairbanks North Star Borough elections, and they didn't put that much in that year. They invested $267.96 to support Carl Castle for mayor, if you remember him. And according to APOC, there was no participation in Fairbanks North Star Borough elections until 2018. And that year, actually in 2018, they participated in the city of Fairbanks election, and they supported Shoshana Kuhn for city council and Catherine Otterston for city council. And both those candidates did well that year and won. And then they really upped their game in 2021. They invested $23,000 in that election, and all of their preferred candidates won that year, and that would be David Guttenberg for Assembly, Savannah Fletcher for Assembly, Kristen Kelly for Assembly, and then they supported Aaron Marotti for School Board and Choya Sanderson for School Board.
I'm not going to give them credit for that perceived win on their side, though. I think there was some self-sabotage going on from candidates who were opposed to that, or at least one of those candidates.
Well, yeah, my point is they have a pretty good track record, you know, with the candidates they support winning. And $23,000 is a significant amount, but they more than doubled that this year. This year, they had a strong participation in our elections. I've heard a few numbers thrown around. What I was able to determine was that they spent at least $51,000 on this election this year. And all of their preferred candidates for Assembly and School Board succeeded.
Yeah, I went into APOC and I pulled the numbers myself. So I'll just give a summary of the numbers for everybody. So on the Assembly races, through their 24-hour reports, which is, and these are APOC terms, basically these numbers will change slightly when we get absolute final numbers in, but not a lot. So the total amount that the Assembly candidates collectively, all of them raised, doesn't mean they spent it. Some of them might have left some money left over. But they raised $140,000. The school board candidates raised $105,000. So you're talking rounding up, let's call it $250,000. So this one independent expenditure group that's funded the majority by non-Alaskans, spent just over $50,000. Now there's another IE.
The Alaska
Center. I have a printout
of
one of their postcards they did. It's called the Alaska Center. They have a similar disclaimer that says, we're funded majority by non-Alaskans. So I find it so ironic that these non-Alaskans are funding groups. They're calling them Alaska names. It seems so deceptive to me. Like, I've seen a lot of propaganda. That, to me, that's a form of propaganda. It'd be like if I was a billionaire here in Alaska and I wanted to influence a Colorado election, that's where I originally grew up, and I called it the Colorado Center, or Coloradoans for Better Government, or whatever. And sitting back here, I'm rubbing my greedy paws, and I'm like this, you know, capitalistic Alaskan trying to take over Colorado. It's like, you know, it's silly.
I see that in titles of legislation, too, when you hear, like, the different acts that Congress puts out, sometimes the name is not in keeping with what the legislation actually does. You have to really look at the details. Just like these groups, you have to look at the details.
Okay, we are going to a hard break in about 20 seconds, but we got another 20 seconds here. And just for the audience, the call number is 458-8255. We'll certainly be taking phone calls after the break. And feel free to call in through the end of the program. But yeah, so collectively, these IEs spent almost $67,000, and of the total pot of money, we're looking at $311,000 spent, IEs plus Assembly and School Board. So it's a significant component, certainly not a majority, but it is a large component of that total spend.
Yeah, and it's been growing every year since 2015.
We'll be right back after the break. Fairbanks.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
President Biden is just in Tel Aviv meeting with leaders about Israel's war with Hamas. The president says, based on information he's received, Israel is not behind a deadly explosion at a hospital in Gaza.
Based on the information we've seen to date, it appears the result of an errant rocket fired by a terrorist group in Gaza.
The president also meeting with first responders while he's over there. One of them talked about what she's been going through while taking care of people.
I never could have prepared for it in my life. I treated wounded people, soldiers, civilians, but mostly the children, as I am a pediatrician. So babies burned in their mother's arms. Some with stories that I don't think they'll ever recover from.
Back in Washington, the House is still looking for a speaker. Another vote this morning failed to get a majority of votes for any candidate, including the Republican nominee, Jim Jordan. There is some chatter that a speaker pro tempore might be put in place. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports that the Department of Energy announced last week that eight rural Alaskan communities will receive $900,000 towards energy efficiency and conservation efforts. Nenana, Adak, Dillingham, Hooper Bay, Kotzebue, Tuksuk Bay, Unalakleet, and Utqiagvik will receive $900,000 through the DOE Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Competitive Program towards conducting energy assessments and developing energy and conservation plans for public facilities. This project will improve energy efficiency, reduce diesel fuel consumption, and reduce cost associated with delivering power to these remote areas, a DOE press release stated. Nenana Mayor Joshua Verhagen said that he is excited about how the grant funding will provide energy ratings and improvements to public buildings. Verhagen said that while the city of Nenana has not made an official determination on which buildings will be assessed, the public library, school, and civic center all have energy efficiency issues, he said.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
When the cold settles in, wrap yourself and the ones you love in fur from the Fur Factory, the Alaskan solution to cold weather. Naturally warm and beautiful fur coats, mukluks, mittens, and hats for work and play are as practical today as always. The Fur Factory's fourth generation family furriers are still crafting heirloom quality furs you will treasure for a lifetime. You'll also see Alaskan gloves and beaded slippers by local artisans. Visit the Fur Factory, 547 2nd Avenue in Fairbanks.
The Go Winter Expo, this weekend at the Carlson Center. The days are shorter, the weather's colder, and the snow, well, you know. The Go Winter Expo shows you how to beat that cabin fever. No matter what you love doing, we have something to heat up your winter fun factor. Check out the newest snow machines, put together a fitness plan, all that and more, plus the Interior Alaska Gun Show. We have something for everyone. This weekend at the Carlson Center, the Go Winter Expo. Info at FairbanksEvents.com. Brought to you by Camper Valley RV and Napa Auto Care Group.
Your miraculous eyes bring your world into focus. The light, the colors, and the faces of those you love keep them in perfect health. Meet Dr. Larry Kuhn, optometrist specializing in contact lenses and comprehensive eye care, emphasizing medical disease. Schedule your appointment with Dr. Kuhn. Call the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your team of ophthalmologists, optometrists, and opticians for complete medical and surgical eye and vision care. Your eye health professionals on Mini Street. Visit eyeclinicoffairbanks.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, North Pole, and the surrounding area, you are listening to KFAR Problem Corner. My name is Aaron Lojeski. I am guest hosting in for David Pruz. Amanda Bowman, a former reporter, is here in the studio. We were just talking about dark money and its influence on our last borough elections. And so the summary was of approximately, this is going to be rounded dollars, of approximately, very rounded, of approximately $300,000 that was spent on our last local election. $50,000 of it was dark money, organized and independent expenditures being raised from out-of-state donors, or majority, not all of it, but majority, over 50%. Amanda.
Yeah, and it's been increasing since 2015. So this is something that as a community we might want to pay attention to track, to be knowledgeable about, to be aware of. Dark money. I started getting interested in dark money from a book by Jane Mayer called Dark Money. And Dark money is across the political spectrum, right? As you know, it's part of the, I don't know.
Not this year.
Yeah.
This year, you're right. This local election, exclusively supported the folks who generally wanted larger government and higher taxes.
Yeah.
And it opposed, and sometimes in dishonest ways, the people who generally wanted smaller government. Let me read something here. So I've got a printout of the back of a postcard. And the top of it, some of you maybe received this postcard. It says, ineffective, adjective. So it's got like a, you know, dictionary definition. Not capable of performing efficiently or as expected. Not producing results. And then it gives three reasons as to why the people who made this postcard believed Tammy Wilson, Jimmy Cash, and Aaron Gibson were ineffective. Which so far we're fine, right? Free speech. They can do what they want. But here's one of their reasons. Voting against critical upgrades at the Hutchinson High.
Happened with that?
I'll tell you what happened. So there's a little, and I always forget the technical name for this, but it's like a steam tunnel from the university power plant over to Hutch. So it's district heating. And it's very old because it must have been put in when the previous power plant was built in, when was it complete? Like 48 or something, the old power plant?
Oh, I have no idea.
It was still functioning when I was a student at UAF, and it would have been the power plant when you were a student.
Remember those outages?
No, I don't remember having the outages. It was working perfectly fine.
I remember being in the Wood Center during an outage.
Well, my experience was it was working fine. I'm sure if we got an employee who was running it, they would have a different story about all the Band-Aids they were running around and putting on for the last 20 years or whatever.
They got a new power plant now.
Yes, but the bottom line is that the Hutch gets its heat, district heating, from the UAF power plant. And I believe it's still functioning to this day, but you'd have to go check with Hutch staff or borough staff to get the full story. But the bottom line is that this little steam tunnel was in poor condition, and it was believed that it could cease to function at any moment. So the idea was they're going to keep using it as long as they could, but it could break and stop working. And so the administration said, okay, we have this big risk. What we'd like to do, and we're talking about this at the end of the last heating season.
And you mean the borough administration.
Yeah, because the borough takes care of the school district buildings. Hutch is a borough facility. So the Fairbanks North Star Borough Administration said, okay, we'd like, and I forget how much it was, but it would have been approximately $1 million. It might have even been $1.5 million. But it was in that ballpark, and they said, we need to put in a traditional boiler system so that if this steam tunnel goes out, the high school doesn't freeze up, and students can still go to class, and teachers can still go to work. And so there were a couple of assembly members who said, okay, great. We just want to think about it for another week because we just want to do a little more fact digging, and I forget what they wanted. And so it got delayed a week, and then it was approved. Unanimously.
Yeah.
Everybody voted for it. So they're claiming on this postcard that Tammy Wilson, Jimmy Cash voted against it. When they didn't, they voted for it.
And then Aaron Gibson, for a delay or something? Is that where they got that?
It's not uncommon
to
delay
though.
Something.
It's misleading, just
Like,
if in the end they voted for it.
Well, hold up. Last night on the Borough Assembly, we are still technically discussing what date we want to have the election on. Nobody voted against it. We auto-adjourned at 11:30 because that's what our rules say. So it went forward to a different time.
Yeah.
So there's nothing weird about saying, hey, we just want to get, you know, it means they had some questions for staff. They couldn't answer it.
Right.
So they said, well, let's wait a week so you can answer the question.
Yeah. And I like that.
They did not vote against it. They voted for it. That's
a
factually incorrect statement. And then to lump in Aaron Gibson on that, he wasn't on the assembly.
Yeah.
And not only was he not on the assembly, he had no position on this. But if he had, and I've never asked him this question, but there's no question he would have voted for it. And
I like that you guys will sit and look at $1 million. I think $1 million is a lot of money, although I know you guys deal with bigger numbers and it's not a jaw-dropping amount for...
It's a lot even for the assembly.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of money. So if you guys, if leaders want to have all their questions answered and want to understand, you know, why that allocation is needed, I'm all for it.
So this dark money comes in and then it lies. I think you could make the argument factually that that first statement is a total lie. Now, the next statement, they say attempting to lower minimum education funding. That is debatable. You know, so I'm going to give them some discretion on that statement. I'm not going to say that that's a lie. You can make a case that it's true. You can make the case that that's false. And then their third claim is failing to address the public safety crisis in the city. Well, that's true.
That
but let me add
borough?
Some context. Yes. You could also say you should not vote for these folks because they failed to address the public safety crisis in Mexico City.
Yeah, there's the borough doesn't have public safety powers.
And that's my point.
Could you talk about
Fairbanks that? Happens to be close, but the borough has zero police. That's the city of Fairbanks issue.
And the voters
so they're
have to
trying
grant that.
To blame borough assembly members for a Fairbanks issue, which is why I'm making the comparison. That's no different than blaming them for an issue in Mexico City or Tokyo or pick your random city around the world. They have nothing to do with it.
Well, not nothing. I mean, there's the leaders talk to each other and influence each other between the city and the borough.
But the borough doesn't have police.
Right.
It just doesn't. It does not have police.
Just ambulance, really, as far as I know. And then hazmat, right?
Yes, it does have, ambulance, I don't remember.
Ambulance, fire, and hazmat.
But even those, they're kind of under the umbrella of the borough, but they're almost like separate little governments
that
have to
exist. Yeah, they're service areas, right?
Yes, they're service areas. So they do exist in this broader umbrella, but it's really up to the voters in those service areas to determine their mill rate, their level of service, and you know whether they're spending a lot, not very much. Like this was a controversial one out in Two Rivers, right? They had the fire service area imposed, and they got together and they got their, and I forget the name of it, but it's essentially the board of directors of the service area. It's got a different name. Maybe it's the commission. For the service area. And what they determined was they wanted to have the smallest level of fire service possible. So that they don't have fire trucks, they don't have a building. What they have, right, and they are going to vote on whether they want to dissolve or not here in a few weeks. I think it'll be in November. But as of right now, they have a fire service area where I'm wanting to say maybe they give out like a few fire extinguishers and they'll do like some fire alarm checks, something like that. Like it's bare bones. It's the smallest level of service possible, which also means that they're going to have the least tax burden. And that's what they wanted based off of what
that's
the commissioners voted.
I lived for a while in an area without fire service.
Well, that's what I mean. You could have
I watched
a fire
the neighbor's
service
house
area
burned down.
That has a superficial superficial level of service, or you could have a full-fledged fire department. And same thing with your road service areas. They could be grading the road once a year, or you could have a paved, you know, fancy road.
Yeah.
With great drainage and great culverts and everything.
If the borough wanted police powers, wouldn't it have to ask for voter permission?
If the borough wanted police powers, I believe the answer is the borough could not be a second-class borough and
can't
have
law
powers.
Enforcement?
I think that's the case, but it's a state law question.
Okay.
The borough can acquire some powers in excess of its base powers. There is a list of state powers that it can get. But it has to go to the voters to get them. I don't think police powers is one of those. So I believe in order for the borough to get police powers, it would have to get upgraded. And I don't mean upgrade as in it's a better thing. It would have to be upgraded to a first-class borough, which has those powers.
Okay.
Which would be very complicated because the city's a first-class entity. So would it be a first-class entity inside of a first-class borough? Or would the city get absorbed? Yeah. Would the city expand and take over the borough? Or would the borough take over the city? Or it would be a very complex question of how that was dealt with. So we got about a minute until our next break.
Yeah, but, let's get back to dark money.
But back to this particular mailer, the point is those candidates didn't have anything to do with police powers in the city, yet they're being attacked for.
Yeah.
Now, why would they attack them for the city of Fairbanks? Well, I can't tell you for sure, but I would tell you this. In propaganda, believable lies are used, not unbelievable lies. So if they had attacked them for for failing in Mexico City, people would have known it would have been an obvious lie. But if they attacked them for Fairbanks, they're probably hoping that some of the voters don't know these nuances between police powers of the state, police powers of the city, and the lack of police powers of the borough, and trying to fool people. I would take that as highly deceptive, and that's actually worse than some other lies because it's so believable.
Is it possible that because this group has an Anchorage address and supporters from Colorado and Washington, D.C., that the architects of this just don't understand how our local governments are set up and don't understand that they're putting things together and making assumptions that aren't true because these are people that aren't in our community and aren't aware of how we do things here.
Is it possible? Yes. Is it plausible? I would personally say that's a low probability event. It's possible. But I can tell you when this stuff happens in politics, usually it's intentional. So I could give you an example. So I ran for state house back in 2012. I ran twice. I lost both times. 2012 I ran. And I said, hey, we got a looming budget crisis coming. And I gave all the reasons why. It turned out I was right. Being right doesn't get you elected. I lost the election. 2016, I come out and I put that quote on, I was quoted actually by Suzanne Downing, and she cherry picked that and she put the quote and she's like, look at this guy. He called this financial crisis. You should consider voting for him, something like that. And what my opponent did, who happened to be a Democrat, is he took that quote, which also said we need to cut state spending. Back in 2012, that's when I said we needed to aggressively cut state spending to avoid a fiscal crisis. And took that quote and quoted it from 2016. Time traveled the quote by 4 years to make it look like I wanted to aggressively cut the budget in 2016 to make me look like I was some sort of radical, reckless candidate.
So did you change your position by then? Or
It came out like a week before the election. I didn't have time to
respond.
No, I thought state spending should stay relatively flat at that time.
Okay.
So they took this. This it would be like if someone took a quote from you from 20 years ago when you were reporting on some position that the state had. The situation totally changed.
Right.
And then they portray your current position as if that is it. It's really.
That happened in this election, too, this municipal election to Jimmy Cash, right?
Yeah, and actually, let's talk about Jimmy Cash. We need to go to a break right now. So, Fairbanks, you're listening to KFAR Problem Corner, guest hosted today by Aaron Lojeski. Call number is 458-8255. We will see you after the break.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
So, how's your memory? Can you remember this name? It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. It's pretty simple, but it's a name you want to be familiar with. You see, good plumbers, plumbers who can get to your problem quickly and do a top-quality job fixing it all at a reasonable price, well, let's simply say they're scarce. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical is quick to the problem. They're quick to the solution. And when you have no heat, or you have a bad plumbing leak, your HVAC isn't working, or your pipes are frozen, you want your problem fixed. So who do you call? I told you to remember the name. It's Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Boilers and water heaters, snow melt systems, of course, drain cleaning. They also own Victory Drains. And you'd be surprised how much more. So look, you don't have to try to remember the phone number. Just remember the name and look it up from there. One more time now. Say it with me. Living Waters. Right. Living Waters Plumbing and Mechanical. Okay. Well done.
It's time again for the Alaska Health Fairs, a nonprofit providing health fairs statewide since 1980. These health fairs offer free education, screenings, and the most affordable comprehensive blood tests and caring customer service in Alaska. The next Alaska Health Fair is this Saturday for the North Pole Community Health Fair from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. at 301 North Santa Claus Lane. For more information on the upcoming Alaska Health Fairs, go online to alaskahealthfair.org.
KFAR Weather.
Overcast skies today with a chance for snow. High of 32. Winds out of the southwest 5 to 10 miles per hour. Snow likely tonight. Lows level off around 23. Cloudy skies expected. Overcast tomorrow. Snow showers likely. Daytime highs approaching 29. A dusting of snow tonight. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Welcome back, Fairbanks and North Pole. You're listening to KFAR Problem Corner. Amanda Bowman is here live in the studio, and you wanted to talk about Jimmy Cash.
This is not a... This wasn't a dark money. This was came from his opponent, but I got a card that had a partial quote from Jimmy Cash discussing how we've had unjust laws on the books in our country, how that's a thing, how that happens. And anyway, the quote was kind of taken out of context, and it was put on a card that said, you know, we can't have this extremist in office. And I thought that, I don't know how Jimmy took it. Maybe you talked to him about it, but I thought that was a little rough.
Yeah, so what I can tell you is sometimes on the borough assembly, Jimmy would get carried away with how he was portraying his point. Now, his point could often be very reasonable, very mainstream, but he would sometimes...
Use an analogy.
Yeah, use language that could be seen as extreme, even though it wasn't. And so... I think we were talking about the trails plan, which he voted for, by the way. So did Tammy, and I think they were both attacked for opposing it. But they passed it. At any rate, it passed in a 7-2 vote. And I was the architect. I took care of a huge amount of private property concerns with it. I really did. And we only have 10 minutes. I'm not going to go into that. But it was actually maybe one of my best moments on the Borough Assembly, on the floor, like working something out and bringing everyone together, forming the compromise that actually made everybody happy, basically, or close enough to happy that they were all good with it. But at any rate, so there was a element of borough code that Jimmy had a problem with, and the problem was, or the risk, this is the property owner's risk, is that there are a few trails in the borough where if the trail crosses your property, and maybe that trail, who knows how it came into existence 50 years ago, 100 years ago, maybe it was even squatted in, like people just built a trail, and then poof, it's there, right? Then they start using it. So there's certain trails, and it's not very many of them, it's certain A or B trails where that happens. If you're the landowner and you go to subdivide, where as a condition of subdivision, you have to grant that trail an easement, which is a legal right-of-way. So being forced to grant that easement is in some ways actually worse than eminent domain, because at least with eminent domain, you get compensated for the loss of property rights. And so rightfully so, Jimmy said, well, this is a problem. It's a flaw in protecting private property rights. He was right. But what he ended up doing was he should have said, we've had things in this country that have been 100% legal that have been absolutely wrong. And he should have said, I think that this particular process within the subdivision code is legal but isn't right. That's how he should have explained it.
And more.
That's not what he did. Instead, he said, he started talking about slavery in the U.S. because for him that was the example of something that was legal but was very, very, very wrong. And, you know, the people at the time, well, even at the time, even back to the foundation of the country, a lot of people recognized that, but it was just such a contentious issue. I mean, we had to go through, in the end, a civil war to take care of it. And the bloodiest, you know, it was a very contentious issue. But he decided to use that as an example. So they chopped out a quote, took it out of context that Jimmy was talking about slavery, and they just made it look like he was just like
pontificating on slavery.
Yeah, a mad ranting lunatic when he wasn't. He was just saying, just because something's legal doesn't make it right.
Yeah, you wouldn't have caught that from how it was characterized on the postcard. So, you know, you see that a lot in politics. I think that's part of what turns people off of politics is the, you know, misleading characterizations. People get really turned off by that, I think.
Well, I gave a presentation last week on Friday about elections, what happened. And I proposed, and I called it kind of facetiously. I was like, I have a radical proposal. I have a radical belief. It's not really radical, right? That's why I'm saying facetious. The way you get reelected, now it's different for getting elected the first time. It's so much more difficult to get elected the first time because you don't have a track record. But the way you get reelected is, well, first you do a good job and then you tell the people what you did. That's it. You do a good job, you tell the people what you did. And it just seems like that's somehow lost, at least in this last election. I didn't see enough of the incumbents telling people what they did, and maybe that's because they didn't raise enough money to get their message out. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, though, you saw ideas getting criticized, but it was only like the criticism was coming from the left toward the right-leaning candidates, but I didn't see a lot of criticism go back the other way. But correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you watched this election closely.
Well, I can tell you, and I shared this when I was speaking to a group on Friday, I was criticized when I ran for re-election 3 years ago. And my opponent criticized me pretty aggressively. And the criticism was on this. At that time, earlier in that year, so this was 2012 spring when the state was doing its budget cycle, Governor Dunleavy made a few vetoes. Actually, I think it was a number of vetoes. And they were fairly controversial amongst some of the community. And so the thing is, when stuff happens in Juneau, they don't have open meetings act like we do. They exempt themselves. So they have all these backroom conversations where sometimes one thing's triggering another thing, and it's pretty much impossible to understand what's going on. Even for the people making the deals, they're half operating in the fog of war, and they don't know exactly. They have a much better idea than we do, and a lot of times they're going to be right, but they don't always know for sure how it's going to pan out. So we had this series of vetoes by Governor Dunleavy, and there was a big push for the Borough Assembly to pass a resolution saying, shame on you, Governor Dunleavy. Your vetoes are bad, right? And again, there's this massive fog of war. And I wasn't willing to vote for that resolution. And I said, no, let's see how it plays out, because we don't understand everything that's going on behind the scenes. So I voted no. It passed 7-2 or something like that. I don't remember what the vote total was. That resolution passed. So I was attacked over and over and over again for that. And I actually didn't even defend myself. I spent all of my money on telling people about the good job that I did. I shouted my message louder than the attack was, and I actually got over 9,000 votes. It was 57.5% of the vote. If you were to look at these elections in the right-left paradigm, as people often do, that was the best election result we've had in a contested assembly race since Natalie Howard got elected back in 2010 or 2012. I think it was 2010. She did very well. She got over 60% of the vote. It was very impressive what she did. And I know she sometimes comes on the radio here and talks on this program itself.
I'm curious about this. You decided not to criticize your opponent's ideas, because I think it's mean, and I don't like the personal criticisms myself, and I don't want to hear about it. But I think it's all fair game to go after ideas that you don't like and say, hey, vote for me. My ideas are better. Well, those ideas are bad, and here's why mine are good.
So here's the campaign thing. My strategy was to raise more money than my opponent so I could get my message out more. So if I started defending myself, then I was going to not be using those dollars to tell people about
your story,
the capital improvement plan, and how we were saving money and paying down debt.
And you think that was more
bringing
successful?
Bringing down taxes.
And you think you were more successful with that strategy?
In hindsight, I probably would have won if I defended myself. I think I would have been elected by a smaller margin, though. I really do. And I'm not saying this is always the case. I think it probably depends on how you're attacked to whether you need to respond or not. But for me in that election, it was I had done a good job and I was going to tell people what I did. I wasn't going to go off, let them. I would have been surrendering the narrative to this challenger and letting him decide what we were talking about. And I wasn't going to do that. I was going to decide what I was going to talk about and let the voters know that I had done a good job.
Oh, so by responding, sometimes it feels like you're letting them set the field, you know.
Tempo.
The
There's something in chess. I used to play chess when I was a kid. It's called tempo. Tempo means you make the move and the other side is responding.
And you want, yeah.
So it's always a good thing to have tempo. So I'm not saying that you can't respond, but you are surrendering the tempo to the other side, whoever that other side is, when you respond. And there's definitely cases that should be responded to. If it would have been possible for Tammy, Jimmy, and Aaron Gibson to do a counter mailer to this one we just described on the air, they should have. But
yeah. What do you think could have been different, or what is the response to this loads of dark money coming in to our local races? Like, have you thought about that?
The candidates should have raised more money.
Yeah.
If you have more money, that's when you're in a position where you can, if you want to, ignore their message and focus on your story. But if you have $10,000, I mean, right, that one group spent $50,000. It was over six races, but they were doing it efficiently by tripling up. They oftentimes had a triple ad for school board or a triple ad for assembly.
But I saw that all around. There was teaming up.
Right, but I guess what I'm getting at is, like, Tammy Wilson raised $12,000. Jimmy Cash raised $20,000. Aaron Gibson raised $25,000. They didn't have the financial resources to compete with that. If they had raised $40,000 apiece, $50,000 apiece, and they had really relentlessly focused on telling their story, I think that they could have won the whole election, but they just didn't raise the money. And I'm not, like, you know, some of it's on the donors if they didn't want to give, some of it's on the candidates if they weren't asking, some of it could be on the voters for not doing enough research, whatever. But at the end of the day, the voters, whether it was a flawed process or not, and of course, the spoilers, democracy is always a flawed process, but it's the best process we got, so we should keep it. But, you know, the voters decide, and you know what? Next year, the voters get to decide again. And the year after, the voters decide again and again. And so we get to go into this every time.
Yeah.
Do you have any closing statements, Amanda?
Really appreciate you bringing me on today. I just think the dark money in elections is really interesting. And thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you, Fairbanks and North Pole. You have listened to Problem Corner with Aaron Lojeski and guest host and the guest, Amanda Bowman. Have a great day.
Your station. This is KFAR Radio, Fairbanks, the heartbeat of Alaska.
calls for a ceasefire on Matt Napolitano. Fox News, a large group of protesters inside the Cannon building on Capitol Hill calling for a halt to conflict in Israel.
This is one of the biggest demonstrations I've ever seen inside any of the House office buildings. They have demonstrations here regularly. I might note that there were some disruptions this morning during the confirmation hearing of Jack Lew to be the U.S. ambassador to Israel. These were people saying that there was a genocide.